This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Malcolm Honlein Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, my colleague and co-host, and we're very pleased to welcome Max Boot of the Washington Post, importantly also the biographer of Ronald Reagan. His new book out, I recommend, Reagan, His Legend and Life. A wonderful story over many years, but that was then. This is now, and Max is writing about the war in the Middle East in many iterations. The ceasefire, the word comes up constantly. The ceasefire with Hezbollah is said to be holding, although there have been interruptions. However, the ceasefire in Gaza is non-transparent. Malcolm, I'm just checking with you. Is there any active or suggested negotiation in the Gaza conflict right now?
There are ongoing outreach, and it seems that Qatar is playing a role, but I think it's for an interim deal, trying to get the women, men over 50, something to show the people that there's some advance, but not a permanent deal.
I do note that over the last several days, several deceased hostages have been recovered by the IDF. Max, a very good evening to you. You ask a very hard question. If we can do a ceasefire in the north with Hezbollah, which has enormously more capabilities of damage than Hamas, given its arsenal and its numbers, why not a ceasefire in Gaza? That has not changed since you posted your column. What do you observe is the hesitation? Is it Jerusalem? Is it Cairo? Is it Tehran? How do you read this, Max? Good evening to you.
Good evening. I mean, I think primarily it comes down to Israeli politics, which is that, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu was in a coalition with the extreme right-wing parties in Israel, led by Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. And the extreme right was hesitant about a ceasefire with Hezbollah, but it wasn't a deal breaker for them. They were willing to go along with it. But basically, a ceasefire with Hamas is a deal breaker for them, because at this point, to get the Israeli hostages out, the 100 who are still in captivity, some of them alive, some of them not, would require freeing Palestinian prisoners from Israeli prisons. And that is something the right wing is not willing to do in Israel. And they want to keep on fighting until Hamas is absolutely destroyed, even though the Israeli military says they cannot achieve that objective. And Yoav Gallant, who was the defense minister up until fairly recently, after he was fired by Netanyahu, General Gallant said that there was nothing more to be achieved militarily in Gaza. But I think it would be too difficult for Netanyahu to extricate Israeli forces from Gaza at this point. So kind of the path of least resistance is to keep fighting, even though it basically means that the IDF keeps attacking the same areas over and over again, especially in northern Gaza. And it's kind of a policy of diminishing returns.
Malcolm?
They are discovering and uncovering tunnels and capturing terrorists. But the question is, how long does that process continue? And the same thing in terms of Hezbollah. When you see the significant missile capacity, the other things that they retain, Israel uncovering tunnels full of weapons still and taking truckloads out, what is it that Israel long term can a ceasefire enable a further deal? Or do you believe it's really just an interim phase before conflict inevitably resumes?
I mean, I think it's probably the latter rather than the former. But, you know, a pause between conflicts can be a good thing for everybody. I mean, remember back to the last major Israel war in Lebanon, which was in 2006, which did not have a very satisfying conclusion from the Israeli standpoint. And yet it bought 17 years of peace up until 2023. So 17 years of peace along the northern border, that's pretty good. I mean, if the current conflict and the current shellacking that Israel has delivered to Hezbollah, if that deters Hezbollah from attacking Israel again for 17 years, that's pretty good, even though it's not a final victory over Hezbollah. But I don't think a final victory over Hezbollah is within Israel's capability, because it would basically require the occupation of Lebanon, which is something that Israel has done before and doesn't want to do again.
Max, the Hezbollah component is a surrogate for Iran. End of this story is in Tehran. How so, Max? What will end the story?
Well, I'm not sure this story has an end until the current Iranian regime ends, but it's been around for a long time, you know, since 1979. And I don't see any obvious way that the United States or much less Israel can topple the theocracy in Iran. I think as long as that regime remains in power, it will continue selling oil, and it's selling oil to China, which is really outside the capability of the U.S. to stop. So it will continue making petrodollars, and then it will continue funneling some of those proceeds to fund a network of militias and terrorist groups across the Middle East that it sees as exporting Iranian power. So I don't think you're going to end that necessarily, but I think you can. There are greater and lesser degrees of the Iranian threat. And I think based on the Israeli military actions of recent months, I think it's greatly decreased the Iranian threat. I think the Israelis have done massive damage to Hezbollah, which is Iran's number one proxy in the region. They've also, of course, done massive damage to Hamas, which was, you know, another Iranian supported group. And now you're seeing that the Iranians are on the back foot. And in Syria, which is a country which has almost become, you know, a wholly owned Iranian subsidiary, the Assad regime, which is Iran's client state, is reeling right now because rebel forces have just captured Aleppo and Hama and dealing big blows to Iran's allies. And of course, Israel itself has dealt some big blows with their two airstrikes on Iranian territory in retaliation for Iranian missile strikes. Those airstrikes, according to the reporting, have done a lot of damage to Iranian air defenses, and that potentially leaves Iran very vulnerable if Israel decides to follow up with further strikes or if the U.S. under President Trump decides to join in.
Malcolm,
as in the case in Iran, I think we have to look to the people. But in Lebanon, I see interviews now in international media where people are blaming Hezbollah openly. And I know that the Lebanese people feel it's a yoke, many of them. What is your sense of where the people will be now in this ceasefire period? Will they look for accountability? Will they support building up the Lebanese government? Will they put a government into place finally?
I'm skeptical. I mean, Lebanon has been such a dysfunctional basket case for so many decades. I very much doubt that it's suddenly going to have a strong government and will be able to do something about Hezbollah. I mean, look, Lebanon is a country torn apart by sectarianism, right? And right. Hezbollah's base is among the Shia, Lebanese Sunnis and Christians and Druze don't necessarily like Hezbollah. In fact, even some Shia are very unhappy that Hezbollah has dragged them into this ruinous war with Israel. But Hezbollah, their power does not derive from the ballot box. Their power derives from the point of a gun. And they are still the most powerful military force in Lebanon, more powerful than the Lebanese armed forces, despite the losses they have suffered in the latest war with Israel. And they are still being supplied by the Iranians. And so I don't think there's going to be any group in Lebanon that will be strong enough to end Hezbollah's grip on the Lebanese state. Sadly, I think most Lebanese aren't happy about it, but they don't really have a choice. And I don't see things fundamentally changing in the near future in Lebanon. Again, I think it would take a change of regime in Iran for things to dramatically change in Lebanon.
Max Boot of The Washington Post, Malcolm Hoenlein.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.